WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Greetings and welcome to WrestleSpective. I am your host, Jason Mann. And before we begin, I want to tell you a little bit about our sponsors. First of all, RotoReels.com, which is a great place to get DVDs and downloads of many years and many places of professional wrestling. And also, GredunzaPress.com, which is the host of this and many other great professional wrestling podcasts. Also, it has other websites of interest as well. So if you're looking for some website and podcasting needs for an affordable price, check out GredunzaPress.com. And my guest today, first time on WrestleSpective, though I've chatted with him about wrestling before on one of his podcasts, What a Maneuver, along with his co-host Joe Drilling, also part of the other On the Stick family of podcasts. Eric Allen, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
No problem. I'm doing fine.
You were expecting me to say something else,
I guess, yeah.
It appears.
Good job paying attention on Jason's part.
You did a really nice job on that cold read there, that advertising to open the show. Like, I could never pull that off if we had a sponsor for our show. It would immediately turn into just a total cluster, and I'd never make it through it, so...
Well, I appreciate that coming from a man with the podcast experience that you have.
I have done way too many podcasts, Jason.
Yeah, I've done a decent number myself. This is close to I'm close to 200 now, I think.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, if my show's got like 170, and if you count various appearances, maybe closer to like 185, 190. But you know, I'm getting there.
Yeah, I don't. Because we have like three different podcasts, so I don't know how many I have, but it's probably. It's probably around that many, so.
Yeah.
Well, so this should be awesome because we have lots of reps.
Exactly. Yeah, we're totally experienced. Although, you know, we're kind of new together. I mean, we've done What a Maneuver twice, so we kind of got that vibe. But it's like one on one. We've been doing the three ways so long that once you get on like the one on one action, it's like mm-hmm. you forget, you know.
Mm-hmm. So we don't have Joe. We don't have Joe around this time.
I know.
Sorry, we don't need that jerk anyway.
No, exactly. So, you can get all your frustrations with him out on the show. I feel like burying him or something. You know,
he's so overbearing, man. You don't understand.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So we're traveling back in time, not as far as you normally travel, but we're traveling back to the year 2004.
Ooh, I can see the wavy lines of the tunnel and the time traveling, I don't know.
Apparatus?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it is quite majestic.
It's beautiful, man.
We can. It's very good for podcasting is to describe the waves. But so this is perhaps the fall of Randy Orton, the autumn perhaps of Randy Orton, maybe the fall in a different way as well. But Randy Orton ended the summer as the world heavyweight champion, having defeated Chris Benoit. And the next night, his stablemates in Evolution, Triple H, Batista, and Ric Flair, turned on him kind of out of nowhere. And then Triple H won the title from Randy Orton at the September show. So this was the first pay-per-view appearance of Randy Orton since then, because they were still in the era of Raw and SmackDown switching off on pay-per-views. So Orton wants to get his revenge on his betrayal and losing his title here. And so that's sort of an interesting way they handled that storyline, because it was very, very, very compressed.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It was, I think, rushed, maybe another good word for it, because that's I had jumped, like, I just stopped watching wrestling for quite a while, like right after they started the invasion angle. I just hated
everything about that. It made me very mad as a guy that liked both WCW and WWF. And then when I heard that Eddie Guerrero had won the championship, and I heard the rumors that Chris Benoit was going to win it at the WrestleMania 20, I kind of jumped back in because I wanted to see that. I felt like I should support those guys since I liked them so much. And so I started watching wrestling around that time again. And I think it was right after the show that I stopped watching it, actually, just because I was so upset with how poorly they handled turning Randy Orton into a face. And I just felt like everything they did was kind of a mistake, and it was just sort of back to the status quo of having Triple H get his, 20-minute promos on Raw every week. And I was just kind of bored with Triple H.
Yeah, he in, 03 and 04, he was definitely at his most insufferable, I would have to say.
The King of Kings thing, I think, was the... And it also just seemed like every time he lost the title, it was just like him in pursuit of trying to like break Ric Flair's record of regaining the title. Like they didn't have many other options, and I kind of understood why he had it, but it just seemed like they would move it around a little bit just to put it right back on him so he could, get whatever number 17. I don't think he ever made it, but that was like the internet's the common sense thinking of at the time, like that was what his motivation was or whatever. So
right.
I probably bought into that in a way in which I shouldn't have, but yeah, I don't dislike Triple H, but it's difficult to put up with him for that amount of time.
Right. And I think the thing was that even when he lost the title, the focus of the shows were generally on him still. Like it didn't really change his position. It was kind of like when Goldberg beat Hogan, in summer 98, where Goldberg was still basically squashing jobbers right after that, and Hogan was still doing the main events. I mean, they did a bit with Goldberg, but it was sort of like it was like this big thing, and then it didn't really change anything. And that's kind of what it was whenever Triple H would lose the title.
Yep.
So, I always thought like there was such an interesting thing, and I don't think I've really ever seen this in a storyline of the idea of like the wrong guy in the stable being champion and then the leader of the stable having to deal with that. And then, eventually, obviously they fight and they one of them turns on whatever. But I just felt like there was such a missed opportunity with that story. And they kind of salvaged it a bit because they did sort of the similar story with Batista heading into the next WrestleMania. So, and they saved it. And I also think part of the reason it wasn't a great success, and we can certainly talk about this during the match, is Randy Orton was not a good guy.
No, he's terrible.
He's very forced.
Yeah. I mean, Randy Orton is kind of a doofus no matter what. Like everything he does has like this certain level of like melodrama to it. He just oversells everything too much. And he always looks like a doofus to me.
Yeah.
And I've never been able to get into him, especially like his recent thing where he does like the snaky dancing. And I don't know, he reminds me a lot of Kobe Bryant, like in that he's pretty talented, but there's like something about him that just really rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
And I'll never be a fan of his for that reason.
Okay. So. That's an interesting parallel, because I think you kind of see the lack of authenticity sometimes in Kobe, or like just the incredible, like he tries like this really calculated force thing, but sometimes you almost feel like you see the real guy and it's kind of ugly. I feel the same way about Jerry Seinfeld for some reason.
Yeah, I can see that kind of, especially like anything post Seinfeld has kind of been like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I feel like I see him on talk shows, and you can really see like the separation of like the act and the person. And like, I remember he did some sort of interview, like right after all that stuff with Michael Richards, racist rant, and during the comic standup. It was just interesting, like seeing that dynamic between like the real person and him doing the character. And it was like, oh wow, you seem like a weird kind of maybe semi crazy person, So
yeah.
Anyway,
that success sort of affects people in weird ways sometimes. And
yeah.
They get like it's like a sense of entitlement or something that they emit even when they're doing their best to cover it up, I think.
And obviously I'm reading a lot into a very, very small window of thing, and it could mean lots of different things, but that's just how mm-hmm. we choose to interpret it
mm-hmm.
in this instance. So the deal with...
Haven't there always been a lot of stories about Randy Orton being kind of a dick backstage and like pooping in people's shoes and stuff like that? I feel like I've heard rumors
Randy Orton pooping rumors are all actually have been debunked by people.
Just ruined my night.
I'm sorry, but by people who supposedly were the victims of those. And now, you know, maybe there's one or two that were true. It is certainly true that he did, that there was some shenanigans with him. He's obviously had some suspensions. I believe there was an instance in which he was smoking marijuana openly backstage at one point, things like that. Mm-hmm. But I think in the more recent years, he has been a well-behaved, or is considered to be a well-behaved individual. So,
okay.
He seems to have turned around a bit. But yeah, but there was definitely a period of time in which he was, not regarded as a nice person to be around. And not particularly professional in his mm-hmm. dealings. So,
yeah.
So the deal with this match is Eric Bischoff is the general manager of Raw. He decides to take a night off. Evolution, it's not Orton, but consisting of the other three that were mentioned, is running this Raw. They run afoul of a number of other members of the roster, including Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, and Maven. And they unite along with Randy Orton to push back against Evolution trying to dominate a show. I kind of like that as a callback to the Stephanie McMahon Helmsley era, you know, of 2000. And The Rock, calling for like a walkout with all like the guys, you know, being on his side and then reinstating Mick Foley. It kind of was a nice tie into that storyline. Not obviously intentionally, but just sort of kind of had echoes of that and kind of worked the same way. And actually was an instance of sort of rerunning it that kind of worked, because I thought it kind of played off that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reflects the audience's feelings, I think, of Evolution dominating the show every week.
Yeah.
Yeah, the wrestlers are as sick of it as the audience is.
Right, and they push back. So then the match is made here at this Survivor Series elimination match, in which the winning team gets to each member gets to be GM for a night on the next one of the next four Raws.
Right, because Bischoff is going to take a month off.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. He's got a vacation, you know. Probably yeah. got to. He's got to have threesomes with DDP and his wife. Snitsky and Edge are join Team Triple H, but they also both want to challenge Triple H in during the title. And they show a an instance of Triple H. Saying, well, you know, at least you're with me, Batista, blah, blah, blah. And then he leaves and you get Batista looking at the belt. And I guess maybe the beginning of the tease of Batista's turn that's going to happen in the next few months. Or perhaps just a coincidence. But either way, it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You get some of that like Batista kind of has his eyes on something grander than just being Triple H's toady for the rest of his career.
Right.
Which is pretty nice. But I think it's kind of... This is the Survivor Series. This is Gene Snitsky's pay-per-view. So this is his only main event appearance. Because when you asked me to be on your show, you like sent me a list of all the main events, and he was one of the names that I typed into the find bar on Google Chrome, so that way I could see if he had been in any, so I could talk about him. Because he's for as disappointed as I was with a lot of things happening around, you know, the fall of 2004, I think Snitsky was a bright point for how terrible everything he was involved in was, because he made his debut on a September episode of Raw, and he had a match against Kane and Lita, who Kane had, I don't know if he was married to Lita at this point or if he had just kidnapped her and fathered her baby in the really uncomfortable and awkward sort of half like rape angle, or angle where Lita like gave her body to Kane to keep him from attacking Matt Hardy or something like that. But anyway, supposedly she was pregnant, and Snitsky hits Kane with a chair, and Kane falls on Lita, and she has a miscarriage.
Right. And that is, of course, treated with maturity that such an instance should be treated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Anytime you can have like a rape and a miscarriage happening in a wrestling program, you know that it's going to be handled really, really well.
Yeah.
And so then Gene Snitsky basically decides that, you know, he's got some plausible deniability. He's not really responsible. He's indirectly was maybe the cause of it, but it's not his fault. So that becomes his catchphrase. It wasn't my fault. It becomes his theme music. It wasn't my fault. And he does some really ridiculous things. Like he comes down to the ring with a slow children sign, which I always thought was hilarious. And he also, at one point on a Raw, not long after that, he comes down with a baby carriage and a little fake baby doll. And he punts it into the audience, which is, it's one of my all time favorite, like, horrible wrestling moments. I just, every time I see the gif of it, I crack up. It's just, it's great.
Tasteless. So. Yeah. I do feel like Snitsky is comfortably in like the awesomely bad category for me as well. Because you can kind of see his appeal. You know, he had the size. He just had that kind of goofiness. I think there's some parallels to Sid, but Snitsky mm-hmm. did not ruin two WrestleMania main events. So.
Yeah, he was always kept safely in the middle of the card where he couldn't ruin shows.
Right, and obviously he's in the main event here, but he's one of eight, and he's not a huge part of the match. So,
right,
yeah,
but
go ahead.
But he is a big part of this show. So at the beginning of the show, I think it's the second segment, like a backstage segment after the first match. He meets up with his. So this is back when the two brands were split when Raw and SmackDown were sort of treated as their own individual shows. And this was one of the big mega shows where they would like team back together. And so Snitsky on SmackDown, Snitsky had a sort of a mirror image, like big giant guy who couldn't wrestle and did really dumb things named Heidenreich, who and these two guys meet for the first time. And it like another all time great, horrible backstage segment where Snitsky goes up to Heidenreich and he's like breathing very heavily at him because that's what he did. And he goes, "I like your poetry." And then Heidenreich goes, "I like what you do to babies." And then for like 15 seconds, and then "I'll see you later and I'll see you soon, Snitsky." And that's the whole backstage segment. But it's like just so ridiculous and over the top and completely unnecessary that I can't help but love it.
Yeah.
And,
you know, they kind of missed the boat on making Heidenreich and Snitsky the new Billy and Chuck, you know? The sexual tension was palpable in that instance. So, you know, it's a shame. But, yeah, I believe that Heidenreich also raped Michael Cole. So they both got to be involved in extremely tasteful wrestling angles and around this time. So
yeah, that's great. Well, that's because Heidenreich actually has to be escorted to the ring in a straitjacket, I think.
Yeah,
man. Sometimes wrestling is really stupid.
It is. Often so, it is really stupid.
So and then later on the show, in another backstage segment, Maven, who is like another all-time great. Terrible wrestler is backstage with Coach giving a really boring interview, and Snitsky attacks him and throws him into some boxes and leaves him bloody. So it's questionable whether or not Maven will even make it into the main event.
Yeah. See, so. I was confused because I didn't watch the whole show. I just watched the main event. So, you know, Benoit comes out, Jericho comes out, then Orton comes out. And boy, had I forgotten how bad the beginning of Randy Orton's music was. And then
there's a lot of bad music on this
and
show.
And I'm like, yeah. Also, the song for the Survivor Series, the video package for the main event is probably the most generic. Now I say rock, not rock, but rock song that I've ever heard.
With a W?
Yes, with it. Yeah, A-W-K, rock. You know, so
butt rock, I think, is another appropriate term for that.
Sure.
I think I want to say that song was like a minor hit like during that period, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, that is not rock and roll music. I pretty much stopped listening to around, I don't know, 1995, maybe. I don't know. popular anyway. You know, with some, obviously I've been exposed to things here and there, but anyway. So I wrote in my notes, I'm like, I guess I completely missed Maven's entrance, because Maven is, you know, a guy who's pretty easy to miss because he's about as bland as you possibly can get as a, you know, professional wrestler. So, and then they do the heels come out, and then they show the video of Maven being attacked. I'm like, oh, okay, that explains it. So
here's the thing about Maven. He has a really nice drop kick, and that's it.
Yeah, he does have a nice dropkick. It's true. He and like Hardcore Holly. Like, there's a lot of wrestlers who have a nice dropkick and have nothing else. and Maven was certainly, you know, in that league. And he'd been like, I was thinking like he was fairly new during this point, but Tough Enough was 2001, which I never watched. So I like when Maven first came in, like I knew about Tough Enough because they talked about it, but I didn't like. I was not invested in the character at all. So, but Maven was really like really popular. People were really, really into him because the show was popular and it helped make him a star. But they couldn't really do anything with it because he was so not good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he didn't get any better over the next couple years. And he was released in the middle in mid 2005. So he was not long for this world. But
yeah. That was like during the boom of the boom of the reality shows. All the stuff that the WWE. I don't know that they ever leveraged any of that into anyone. Well, I guess The Miz is the one guy that turned out to be of some value to them. But like they did the Diva searches, I think was one of the things that they were pushing pretty heavily in 2004, where they would just trot them out and have them do stupid things on Raw and then have people vote. And I just don't remember anyone else ever coming of that. Like there was never a great dude that came out of any of that was just a giant waste of time, which is what it felt like at the time. So
sure. We had Christy Hemme for a few months. So,
okay. Yeah. She was cute, I guess.
She got better. She was terrible at first and then became more interesting, after a while, and much better, you know, not like she was like awesome, but you know,
yeah. I probably missed that.
Sure. That's okay. It's not like you missed a whole lot. So, also, during that video, during that attack by Snitsky against Maven, Snitsky admits some sort of combination yell and squeal during that is quite captivating. I can't possibly duplicate it, but it is just it is startling. It's not a noise that I would expect to come from a human being. I feel like it was sort of a piggish noise, but I, you know, it was very interesting. So
I hate that. I hate it when valets make a lot of noise during matches. Vicky Guerrero does that sometimes to the point that I just want to strangle her. And I think Woman used to do that a lot with
Woman
the horseman.
Used to do that a lot. Yeah, that was a little too much. Yeah.
A little bit of that goes a long way.
I would agree with that. Jimmy Hart, I always felt like I never felt too annoyed by Jimmy Hart, at least during that type of thing.
Yeah, I think because the megaphone was so ridiculous and over the top that you couldn't help but like him.
Yeah,
you know, like he would shout into that megaphone just total nonsense that was like barely words of encouragement and no real strategy whatsoever. And it just came off kind of funny.
Come on, Honky, you're the best, Honky. Yeah, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, so Snitsky does not get much of a reaction when he comes out. I guess not a huge surprise, but and then Edge is out next. Now, Edge and Orton, before Orton won the title, Edge and Orton were involved in a feud in which Edge was the good guy and Orton was the bad guy. And that basically ended with them sort of with Edge winning the Intercontinental title and them sort of switching places. It wasn't quite a double turn, but it kind of basically became that.
Mm-hmm.
And Edge was kind of in a weird period where like he had been around long enough and really wasn't like he'd come back from an injury and really was not like getting much of a reaction, like, you know, that people kind of thought, because people when he started, people were like, oh, he's going to be a future star, he's going to be a big deal. And he was kind of like in the place where like, okay, when's this guy going to be a star now? And obviously it eventually happened, but it was sort of like, huh, that's sort of odd, you know.
He was, I think, part of the problem with him in 2004. I don't know what happened. Like, I know he became elevated like later in his career, but I missed all that. But part of the problem I had with him, at least in 2004, is that his finishing move was the spear. Yeah. Which is, that's not a good finishing move, and he doesn't really have the body type to like blow dudes up with a running power move like that.
Yeah.
He's like too, I mean, he kind of looks like a spear because he's so long and lanky in the air, but it just doesn't, I didn't think it really worked for him.
Yeah. And later it got to where it looked really weak. During this period, I feel like he usually did it with like enough speed and enough power that it looked okay. But it certainly didn't look like anything like when Goldberg did it, you know.
Right.
So, we begin with Edge and Benoit in the ring. Benoit pounds him in the corner and knocks him to the floor. Edge bails, but Benoit meets him at the ropes. Eventually, Edge bails and tags in Snitsky, and Orton comes in to surprisingly mild reaction, although he certainly gets a good reaction later. I'm to the point where it's not really weird to watch Chris Benoit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like it's just sort of like, okay, it's Chris Benoit, and yeah. I don't really have like an emotional reaction to him, but I can like notice when he does good moves and that kind of thing. It's just sort of like I feel like, I guess I've just seen him enough that I'm sort of past any, you know, remembering, you know, the horrible things that he did kind of do. I don't know how you feel about it.
That's I mean Joe and I see him every week, so you kind of have to separate like the man's career from his personal life, I guess, at some point, or else you just can't watch it. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, which makes sense, obviously, since you know you're with what, yeah, I guess that you're doing, you don't really have a choice. So
right.
So it's sort of interesting that Orton he sort of badmouths Snitsky. They sort of stand there for a bit. He tries to have an intense look on his face, and this is where I first notice him failing to, to convey expressiveness here.
He does a lot of posing. Like, he does that thing where he stands in the, like, he'll knock a guy down and then he'll stick his chin out and put his hands up in the air. And he does that kind of stuff a lot, but it just doesn't have much of an effect.
Yeah, he does some clubbing blows, some boots, and some really bad punches. His punches got better later, but they're not good here.
They're not Rick Bogner level of bad, but they're
pretty not, bad. No, I will agree with that. They're not really bad, but Jericho's in. He did get some boots in the corner, but then Snitsky clotheslines him down. We had Triple H in, Jericho elbows him down, then Orton's back in, and he sort of tries the Austin thing of punches and kicking Triple H down in the corner. It does not quite have the same effect, though, as you might expect. Then Triple H gets a knee lift to kill the flurry. Then Batista comes in, he gets some punches in the corner, some shoulder blocks. Shows actually really good intensity, even though, you know, he didn't have much finesse. He was kind of stiff, you know, even when he got, you know, relatively good, he still was quite limited. But I do kind of see sort of the fire that he had, that kind of like that personality or, you know, whatever, that kind of lifted him to, you know, what he accomplished.
The way he bounces up from his spine buster is pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
That was the one thing that I always thought really, like, he did that as well or better than anyone else has ever done it. So,
mm-hmm. Which is saying something.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys that have done that move really well, but he would slam a guy down and like pop back up while they were falling in a way that just looked really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Batista gets a power slam, tags to Edge, who milks the crowd for a moment. And he has black elbow pads and black tape fists for some reason, which I don't really recall him. I guess the tape fist is unusual to me.
Maybe he'd been watching some old Hacksaw Jim Duggan matches and thought maybe that would work for him.
There you go. Hey, you know, if you're going to search for some wrestling strat, you know, who better than Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
That's right. He is a tactical master inside the squared circle.
Maybe that's why Edge didn't win a world title until 2006.
Yeah.
So they trade punches for a little while, and then Edge gets a drop toe hold for, and that leads to a near fall, actually. Then Edge attacks Jericho on the apron. Jericho tries to, he tries to come in, basically ties up the ref, but then the heels fail to actually like attack you know, Orton, like, you know, it's like setting up the spot where, you know, the heels cheat behind the ref's back, but then the heels fail to actually do anything to it.
Is this the part where they're fighting about who gets to go into the ring next?
Later. This is more okay. Like this is it's kind of quick, but okay. then eventually Orton gets a tag to Benoit, who cleans house on the heels. He gets a German on Snitsky, then one on Batista, then three on Triple H. He gets a throat slash, and then Benoit suplexes Edge onto Triple H. And then he hits a double headbutt on Edge and Triple H. Snitsky breaks up the cover, and then Jericho tosses him out. Benoit locks the sharpshooter on Triple H for a decent bit. Snitsky breaks it up again, then sort of intimidates the official. Benoit gets the crossface on Edge, and then Batista breaks it up. And then finally, Triple H hits the pedigree on Benoit, and then Edge rolls over and then gets the three. All that sort of came together not really very smoothly. Like, it seems like guys were late getting into the ring, and then Jericho and Orton both had to sell being incapacitated forever.
Mm-hmm. This is not a very crisp match in any sense of the word.
Right. Yeah. I mean, nothing like necessarily wrong with it. It's just sort of like awkward, like the timing of things, like the actual execution of the moves for the most part is fine. And, you know, it's just sort of odd. And like, this is a moment in which, like, this is me being kind of, you know, like I've watched a whole lot of wrestling. So I know that when like Benoit is, you know, cleaning house and getting all his offense and being showcased for these few minutes, it means that he's going to be the first guy eliminated. So like, that was very like easy to see for me. And I knew the result of this match, but I didn't know how it all actually went down. So I felt like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, okay, Benoit's going to be eliminated here soon. And then obviously he was. So,
yeah. A problem with this match, and honestly all the matches on the card, is that you can really feel a lot of the guys just going through their scripting, like as far as how the matches are laid out. Like this match has like three guys that you would say are really good and one that's pretty good and four that are extremely limited, at least in 2004, in you know, their wrestling ability. And I think that that's where a lot of that comes from. It's just like the timing is really weird because they're kind of like going through their paces. Like you can see like, this is step one, this is step two, this is step three. Mm-hmm. There's like a lot of the matches on the card were like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jericho attacks Edge, but he's nailed in the back by Triple H, and both Snitsky and Triple H think they were tagged in at the same point. And then they fight over the tag, which I don't think I've ever seen anyone quite do it that way before. And I was okay with that. It actually was kind of decent, you know?
Yeah. There were a lot of F-bombs dropped during that little portion of the map. It's like, it's my effing turn to get in the thing. No, it's you get the F out. Like, what the F are you doing? Like,
yeah,
there's just like, yeah, they're just like dropping those out there, which I was kind of surprised by.
Yeah. I you couldn't really hear them, but I guess you could see, or at least I couldn't hear them in mine. I didn't actually pick up on that. So, I must not have been paying close enough attention, but
yeah, I could hear it pretty well with my, I had headphones on. I don't know how you were there watching you it.
I did not watch it with headphones. I should have.
Yeah. You miss a lot. All those F-bombs.
I like to get as many swears as I possibly can. So
there must've been a good 8 or 9 from like all three of them. So,
yeah. So, yeah, basically, Snitsky shoves Triple H down. Batista gets in his face. Jericho locks the walls on Triple H while Batista and Snitsky are fighting. He tries to get their attention, and then Batista breaks it up. Then Orton knocks Batista and Snitsky together. Jericho gets the bulldog on Triple H, then goes for the lion salt, but then the lion salt is cut off by Ric Flair. The ref immediately ejects Ric Flair, so we get the, kind of a production there. I do love the moment where Lawler dumbfoundedly asks why, and then Jim Ross responds, "Why my ass?" Ross was feisty during this match. He was maybe even feistier than usual, you know?
Yeah. This was kind of him winding down, I think, for the most part. But yeah, he was pretty good during this match, but he was a little tuned out, I think, for the rest of the show. This is one of those weird shows, again, because of the brand split. There's like three announce tables down by the ring, and it was, I don't know, if you watch the whole show, it's just like kind of weird and awkward as far as how that plays out, because they never really get into a flow. And I mean, the other announce team is Taz and Michael Cole, which that never really was any good anyway, but yeah.
So Jericho and Orton double team Batista, I believe, but then he clotheslines both of them down. Orton is tossed out. Jericho runs into the aforementioned awesome spine buster. Batista, for some reason, tosses off his elbow pad. Then Orton hits Batista with the world title belt. And then Jericho does sort of like his Enziguri thing that he was doing for a while, kind of like he would sort of run and lift up both feet, sort of like a dropkick, but then do sort of like a weird, like, twisting Enziguri thing with one of his feet. It's the best way I can describe it. I'd forgotten he did that and was kind of, I guess, his finisher for a while. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, he did that all. That was one of his, like, five big moves that he did during that period.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, he's sort of switched finishers a lot, actually, because he's had the Code Breaker. He did the Cobra Clutch Slam for a little while. Did the
Lion Salt.
Well, yeah, the Lion Salt. He did the move that, like, the stroke, the Jeff Jarrett move. He did it a little differently, but basically did that move. So he's had, like, yeah, I guess, like, five or so different finishers, which is kind of, which I like, actually, guys having various ways that are believable to end a match. I think that's cool. I think that's, like, a nice thing for a guy to have more than one finisher, especially after you establish one or two, as you know, and you get them over. It's nice to add a few more here and there. Obviously Undertaker is like that, and other guys sort of have that as well.
I don't think any of them were ever as good as the straight Lion Tamer, but
I mean, that's good. I think the Code Breaker's good one. I think that's the best that he's had. Some of the other ones,
the best high impact finisher for sure,
right?
That he's
had. I mean, obviously the it's good to have a submission finisher, but there are times in which you want to win by pinfall. You want to have that as an option, so it's good to have that finisher.
Jericho is flexible. He's I don't know if you knew this, but he's pretty good at wrestling, though.
He generally is. So Triple H is in. Jericho drop kicks Edge off the apron, who hits Snitsky. Batista then, being a spoil sport that he is, gives Jericho a big clothesline before he departs. Then we get Snitsky on offense for a bit. He stomps Jericho repeatedly, hits a big backdrop, does some maniacal yelling and choking,
makes some weird faces.
Yeah.
Puffs out his cheeks a bunch. Yeah.
Right.
This is before his back knee, though. I was kind of disappointed by that, because I remember him having really, really bad acne on his back, but he does not have that here.
Yeah,
so.
And then he also had the yellow teeth later as well. I don't know if you were watching during that period, but...
I saw pictures, because I followed his career pretty closely.
Okay, well, I'm obviously, you are, Gene Snitsky aficionado, so you might even say you have a fetish for him.
He can lick my feet anytime, Jason.
Things that we discover.
A lot of soul searching when you do podcasting.
Yeah, well, it's good to search our souls.
Mm-hmm.
Edge is in. He beats up Jericho for a bit, but then runs into a Jericho sort of a semi-clothesline. Snitsky gets the tag. Orton tries to attack him, but Snitsky tosses him out rather easily. Sort of odd that Orton, being like the big huge star, is able to be dispatched by Snitsky. Like I compare that to like what would happen if like Stone Cold or The Rock got into the ring, and there's no way that the lower level heel would be eliminating him like that. So that was kind of an odd thing to do.
Snitsky is a bad dude. He killed a baby.
That's true. He did kill a baby. That wasn't very nice. I don't know if it's technically a baby. So I don't know if we want to get into like at what moment the fetus becomes a baby.
You think the abortion discussion is outside the scope of this podcast?
I you know, I feel like maybe there might be some of our listeners who may not be quite comfortable with us discussing that. But
so I'll save it. I'll lock it away for some other time.
Okay, you know, maybe that's you and Joe. You know, you guys are socially conscious. You know, I feel like you guys could have a mature discussion about that.
I could not.
Maybe during one of the WCW main events, which are often described as abortions.
Yeah, if we had done it during the Doomsday Cage match, that would have been appropriate.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, Triple H and Edge go around the ring, and they beat up Randy Orton some more. Meanwhile, Jericho DDTs Snitsky. He is looking for the tag, but Orton is busy being beaten up at the table. Suddenly, out of nowhere...
Oh, shit.
It's Maven.
Ah, Maven! My God, it's Maven, Jason. Aren't you excited? Because the audience is not.
No. I remember when Maven was popular, but this was not that time. So, Maven...
It's so sad because, they tried to set it up so that way his entrance into the match would be a really, really big deal, right?
Yeah, like dramatic thing, yeah.
Snitsky attacks him. He's bleeding. I mean, you know, he's split wide open, and he makes his triumphant return, and like there is just zero reaction from the crowd whatsoever.
And he's a house of fire on Snitsky. He hits a flying forearm. He beats up Triple H and Edge as well. I mean, he's, you know, they're giving him a lot. He beats up Triple H, but Snitsky, who at this point is bleeding from the eye, nails Maven in the face with a chair.
No drop kick from Maven. That's his one move, and they didn't even let him get it out. What a bump.
Yeah, that is disappointing. I didn't even think about that. He didn't do anything bad, I guess. He was fine, but yeah, that's disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe somebody else took the dropkick from him.
It's a dropkick in this match. I should have thought about that.
Yeah.
I know Triple H does a spine buster, so they were okay with having two moves repeat, but
well, they're partners, so Triple H gets credit for teaching Batista the spine buster. And he also hits Orton on the outside for good measure. So chairs for everyone, which disqualifies Snitsky. However, Triple H covers Maven right away, who, of course, has been damaged with the chair shot to the face, and gets the pinfall as well. So now it's 2-2. Triple H shoves Jericho into the ring. Edge tries the pin, but it only gets two. Tries two more covers, but they also only get two. Edge misses a charge. Triple H fails to hit the pedigree, but Edge is able to spear Jericho while Jericho is dealing with Triple H. So Edge gets the pin and the victory. So now Orton is down 2-1 against Triple H and Edge, and he is crawling dramatically outside. And we do have a nice moment with Edge and Triple H in the ring, realizing Orton is basically incapacitated, smiling, you know, grinning happily. They realize, hey, this is going to be easy. Randy Orton has been hurt.
Mm-hmm.
We've got this. It's not a big problem. So
nope. He's doing his doofus over dramatic
right
selling of everything.
Yeah, he
breathing extremely hard. So you know he's in pain.
He comes in the ring. The camera pans to him. He makes the come at me motion. And they do.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, I noticed that Mike Chioda here is ineffective at keeping order. He is not good at keeping one man in and one man out. And Jim Ross is very angry about this.
Well, it's not fair.
It is not fair. This is not a handicap match.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, so eventually Edge stays in, slaps Randy in the face, then gets a back suplex for two. Triple H is tagged in. Edge holds him, and Triple H repeatedly slaps and punches him.
Embarrassing the young man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Orton fights back but runs into a DDT, which only gets two. Edge is back in. There are a few punches, but Orton briefly fights back. He's able to get a power slam. Edge almost charges into Triple H on the apron. However... drop kicks Edge, he does run into Triple H, gets a roll up, but it only gets two. Orton punches Edge down, but Triple H gets a spine buster. Edge then tries to spear Orton, but hits Triple H, and then Orton gets the RKO, which finishes Edge, and the crowd does react big to that.
Mm-hmm. That is a great move, no matter who does it. Yeah.
Yes, the Diamond Cutter. It is. So, do you have a preference on RKO versus Diamond Cutter? You know,
If I had to rank the four big cutters, it would probably be, I actually think I like the Diamond Cutter the best, and then probably the Ace, and then the Stone, you know, Stone Cold version, and then probably the RKO at the end, just because I don't like Randy Orton that much, but he does it fine. Like, I don't like, there's not a bad version of that move.
Yeah, he's had some creative ways of hitting it, and DDP did that too. He obviously, the stunner, the limitation of the stunner is like, you have to do the kick first, and you can kind of only have the guy in certain positions to do it. So, you know, you can't, it's harder to do out of nowhere. Like, the best thing about the stunner is the guy who sells it, like how the guy sells it, you know.
like when Vince McMahon pretends like he's actually been shocked.
Right. Or like when, and the only thing I will ever probably say good about Shane McMahon is that, when he would get it and then would leap dramatically, do like a flip, that would be a good way to sell the stunner.
Mm-hmm.
Rock did it big too, obviously. So,
yeah.
Orton has what is sort of like almost like a dreamlike look on his face. Sort of, you know, again, one of those big dramatic expressions that he has. He hovers over Triple H. He tries an RKO, but while the referee is trying to get Edge out of the ring, Triple H hits a low blow, which prompts Jim Ross to say that is a very brutal counter to the RKO.
That is 100% true. You can't argue with Ross's sentiments on that. All I have to do is look at Randy Orton's face to know how brutal that is.
Yes. Now Triple H very dramatically, very slowly sets up the pedigree on Orton. This enables Orton to get the RKO out of nowhere and win the match.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, crowd goes nuts. Good finish there. Good way to end that. Was out of nowhere, but in a good way. He also still was selling the low blow after it while he was sort of celebrating, but he also like had, you know, wasn't like he was just like, you know, like perfectly fine afterward. He actually, you know, his balls were in pain and
he's got that sick feeling in his lower intestine that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, ugh. So, you know, it's a fine, you know, it's absolutely perfectly fine match. There's nothing wrong with it other than, you know, a few moments of awkwardness and, you know, maybe kind of being a little bit by the numbers. But I would say, hey, you know, it was fairly enjoyable. Everyone did fine and I have absolutely no problem with it, but it's not necessarily something I need to watch again either.
Yeah, I'd say I'm in the same boat as you. I mean, I like Survivor Series matches, but I think Joe and I just watched the 1996 Survivor Series, which is, it's got three singles matches and three Survivor Series style matches. And then so the Survivor Series matches are broken up by like a fantastic Bret Hart Stone Cold match and a really surprisingly great Shawn Michaels Psycho Sid match. And I think that it's better to end a show with a one-on-one title match if you can make that happen. Like this, it just doesn't feel like a main event because there's so many like nobodies involved.
Yeah,
but well, it's yeah. It is a pretty decent Survivor Series match for sure.
Sure, I mean this did continue the main event storyline of Triple H and Orton, so you know it's a good way to give Orton a, you know, now Triple H is another reason to have to defend his title against Orton because Orton pinned him, and you know it continues that story. So you know, the Survivor Series is kind of like in a weird place in WWE because obviously like they still will have those traditional tag team elimination matches. And in a couple years this year and, you know, maybe two or three others, they've experimented with having it kind of be like having their central storylines be Survivor Series matches. But for the most part, yeah, that's just sort of like a lower card thing and the main stuff is single stuff. So it's just sort of like they've never really figured out exactly how to have the perfect formula for Survivor Series. And obviously it kind of depends on every year, either depending on the stories and the talent you have and so on and so forth. So I don't know if they'll ever come to a perfect consensus on that, but like I said, I think the Raws, the setting up, having them be the GM on Raw kind of thing was pretty cool. So,
if I remember, I don't think a lot came of that though.
Yeah. Well,
I think like it's just Triple H found a bunch of Weasley ways to get out of facing those guys for the title matches.
True.
Or for the title and at the end of Raw. And I want to say that he beat Maven and weaseled his way out of having to face any of the other dudes. So.
Yeah. Well, let's see. We have the internet to tell us exactly what happened.
And I know I very specifically remember Coach getting his butt kicked by a bunch of different wrestlers because they would announce like it's Maven or it's they would announce it's Coach versus Jim Ross. And then they'd be like, oh, no, wait, it's not Jim Ross. It's whoever. I don't remember who specifically, but I think on every episode Coach got his butt whipped. And so,
yes.
Which so, that's probably what drove him away from the WWF and to ESPN, right?
Yes. Sorry, I blanked on what you were saying, so I'm sorry if
that's
I didn't
okay.
tell your joke. Because here, tell it to me again, and I'll respond to it. I'll respond to it in a totally natural way.
Uh huh. Okay. So why did the chicken cross the road?
To watch Survivor Series 2004.
Ah, wait, we got that backwards. All right, whatever. So, did you find out how those Raws played out?
I did. The first Raw, Triple H defeated Maven, to defend the title. So,
okay.
That was
big surprise.
Yeah,
I can't believe they didn't give that. That was Maven's one shot. Blew it.
Yeah. Then on the next week, Benoit booked himself in a steel cage match with Triple H. However, Triple H and Batista staged a fight with Triple H being injured before the match.
That's the one where Benoit points, I think, at the cage above the ring and says, we're going to fight in that.
Yeah.
That was actually pretty cool.
Benoit then defeated Edge as a substitute in the steel cage. And then the next week, which was the 29th, Benoit and Edge were co-winners in a world title three-way, which led to the title being held up.
Oh, vacated. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and then I think McMahon makes an appearance, right?
Yeah, then it was the Elimination Chamber. There was, let's see, and then, wait a minute, the 29th, there was also apparently a Battle Royal that night set up by Orton. I think that Orton wasn't able to...
Yeah, there was some kind of stipulation where he wasn't allowed to fight Triple H for the title.
Right.
That's why he never got his return match.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess more came of that than I remembered.
Yeah, the Jericho was in charge. Vince vacated the title, and that was about it. And then that led to the New Year's Revolution Elimination Chamber, which Triple H ended up winning. So, which was his 10th world title reign. I believe he has 13. Mm. So he did not get to Flair. So
I guess the rumors weren't true then. He must not have been trying for that.
Maybe not.
Because if he was, he would have gotten it.
Yeah, so. Probably. If he cared enough about it, he probably would have gotten it. It's true. I don't know. Is that something that you feel like a wrestler would really care about now?
Because there was so much negativity surrounding everything he did during that era, I think that's why it was believable.
Yeah.
He just would have done it just because he's a dick. We just don't like him, so we'll believe this about him. But,
I think Maven ended up becoming a crazy person, if I'm not mistaken. I feel like he said some really weird, random, he's one of, I don't know if he actually rants on Twitter, but he's has the mentality of those guys, if I'm not mistaken. I could be slandering him now. I could be.
Is he hanging out with the Ultimate Warrior? And
yeah, that'd be cool. He was looking like the Ultimate Warrior here as far as his muscle tone.
This is like one of the heights of the steroid era, I think. You look at we talked about it a little bit before the show, but like I watched all the matches on this show, and like Eddie Guerrero is roided up to all the heck. Like he looks terrible. He's so stiff and immobile. It's really sad. Yeah. Kurt Angle looks like that. I mean, Triple H is huge in this. Even like this is John Cena kind of on his way from being like, because he grew like exponentially from like 2002 or so till 2007. Like he got giant somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And this is him kind of on his way to that. So
sure. Okay. He was arrested in April of 2012 after cops said that he was doctor shopping to get his fix of painkillers. So it was that. It had nothing to do with being crazy. It just had to do with drugs. So I'm sorry, Maven. I apologize for being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, and Orton was not a champion for another 3 years after this.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't ready.
Orton ended up being fine, but, I mean, he wasn't helped by the booking. I do think, again, if they had taken it slower and kind of let, like, the crowd because they were into him as a babyface when he was a heel, or when he, you know, when he was turning. But as soon as he turned, like it just fell flat, and it was just sort of a combination of a lot of weird things, I guess. But
it was too fast. That would have been like the storyline I was rooting for is almost that Orton would have usurped Triple H as the leader of Evolution, but that would have been asking too much, I think, because you would have had to. Like they would have had to trust the audience to buy into a storyline where there is no definite good guy and no definite bad guy. But I think it would have been a little bit more interesting for him to like, that would have been the new guy pushing the old guy out.
Right.
Which would have been kind of interesting, but
I think you could have had a month or 6 weeks of not being sure who the good guy or the bad guy is. And mm-hmm. them sort of like trying to one up each other and them kind of, you know, and then leading, and then finally you conclude with Triple H making the turn, or I guess you could have had Orton be, you know, I guess you could have had Triple H become babyface here. I mean, you know, that would have been maybe a little soon to do that, but I'm sure fans would have, you know, would have bought it if they'd have done it right. But obviously Triple H liked being the heel, so it was more likely to be Orton. But it, like, you know, like I said, it's a weird thing to complain about because everything pretty much worked out reasonably well for everyone anyway. But still, I felt the same way at the time. Like it was something where, like 2004 was definitely like a time where I was watching more often again. For, I think basically for the same reasons that you were, because of, you know, Eddie and Benoit being pushed, mm-hmm. And then once they kind of bought, you know, what I felt like was screwed up the Orton storyline, I was like, you know, this isn't so fun anymore.
JBL is the champion on SmackDown.
Yeah, right. And
Benoit has kind of been pushed back down the card a little ways.
Right.
And
yeah. And they were,
Edge is kind of on his way, but he's not really there yet. And there's not a lot else going on. Like Jericho was sort of, you know, lost in limbo a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he had that feud with Christian, but he was just sort of like, you know, he's just sort of around. I mean, he was fine, but he was sort of like, you know, just sort of settled into this kind of medium thing. It was just, you know, not a super interesting time.
I think Shelton Benjamin was another guy they were pushing to be like the next big thing. And he was like Maven plus, like he was slightly better than Maven in every way, but still not somebody that could elicit a tremendous amount of reaction from the crowd and didn't have a lot of charisma.
He was super athletic, but, he was really good in like some of the ladder matches, but beyond that, I liked him and Haas when they first started in World's Greatest Tag Team, but that kind of got tiresome. And then, the newer version of that was, when they were doing it later was not good. I've heard the ROH version was not particularly good. I never watched that.
Yeah. Actually, he and Christian had a pretty decent IC match on the Survivor Series. But
okay. There you go. Yeah. Was there anything else that was noteworthy in the Survivor Series?
Not really. I mean, I saw Eugene, like he makes an appearance backstage with Kurt Angle and Edge, which like I'd kind of forgotten about that dude. But man, that was another really tasteful thing that the WWF did that year.
Yeah,
that was great. I know Carlito, who I was kind of a fan of, but he never really.
Yeah,
I think he got Carlito. Yeah, he was funny.
Yeah,
he had a good character. He had a character, which is more than you can say for a lot of the guys involved. But then he run afoul of the wellness program later on, and
No, well, he might have had a suspension or something, but I think it was more that he didn't really like being around and didn't like doing it, and eventually they decided to get rid of him because he just wasn't his attitude wasn't great.
Okay.
I think he's admitted that himself, that he didn't like doing it and just was like was sick of it and just wanted to be done, and eventually they let him out of his contract.
All right, so
he's funny.
Yeah, I enjoyed his little run that he had there, or at least when I saw him. I think that's about it. I guess the last thing is that I have to say anyway is that I just like to do a little. I assume that Snitsky was inspired maybe by Heidenreich's poetry that he adored so much. And later on, much later, I think sometime in 2005, the Lita ends up betraying Kane. Which I don't, and somehow she turns heel based off of that, right? Which makes no sense, since that was a forced wedding that she had to marry Kane because he won a wrestling match.
Right.
And he was potentially her rapist, but somehow she was the bad person for turning on him and ended up with Edge.
Well, it's because she really broke Matt Hardy's heart.
Right. Well, that was actually later, like that. That was after, but anyway.
No, I think that was in response to that. I think they did the turn because of the response she was getting because of the Matt Hardy situation, but Matt Hardy wasn't on TV yet.
Okay. Is that how that, I thought that, but anyway, what I just wanted to, when Edge and Lita got married, Snitsky came out and he read this just beautiful love poem that I felt was my duty. I was honor bound to share this with your audience. So if you don't mind,
please do.
Like, do a little reading. Okay, so it's not my fault you fell in love. It's not my fault it came from above. It's not my fault Edge and Lita chose this direction. It's not my fault Kane can't get an erection. It's not my fault what love can do to us. It's not my fault that you had a dead baby in your uterus. Which is, that is a fantastic rhyme, a brilliant Shakespearean, I think, due to us and uterus.
At the very least, it was Lanny Poffo-esque.
So yeah, Gene Snitsky, not just a fantastic wrestler, not just memorable for his incredible back knee, his foot fetish, his baby punting, but also for his, just for the fact that he's a wonderful wordsmith as well. So.
Yeah. We do have some Twitter questions.
Oh, we do?
We do.
Awesome.
First of all, from Tony Keel at TKS Pizza for Life.
That dude's cool. I think he tweets us sometimes, too.
Okay. At any time, did you think Maven had a bright future in the WWE?
No.
I agree. All right.
He had a nice drop kick.
Nice question. Yeah. He was popular, but I never understood why because I didn't watch Tough Enough. So, basically another one. Did Maven underachieve or overachieve? This is from Rich Thomas, Earth Dog, our good friend, and been on both of our shows. Could he have gone further in WWE? I mean, I feel like he, based on his talent, I guess he overachieved, but based on what people thought of him at first, or what people thought he was going to be because of how popular he was coming out of Tough Enough, he underachieved. So,
yeah, I mean, you have to say that he was around for whatever, 4 or 5 years, and
sure,
he was in a main event at Survivor Series. I mean, that's a pretty good career compared to what a lot of guys have, but
he eliminated Undertaker from a Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good on him.
Man, he's a boring
with a drop kick. Yeah.
That devastating dropkick.
It was a good dropkick, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and then last but not least, from that Jeremy guy, at Jeremy the MVP, what would Snitsky have done if he were GM?
There's so many directions that I could go with this, and none of them, they all end in just horrible, tasteless ways. So I'll just say that, he would have ordered some of that like microderm abrasion stuff for his back, and he would have had somebody, you know, carefully curate his beard, and he would have given himself a title shot, and he would have won. he would have nailed Triple H with that slow moving children sign, and he would have been champion. And I think the whole WWE philosophy, the whole show just, it takes a turn for the better at that point. But unfortunately that never happened, and they've been sort of locked in a quagmire ever since. So
it has been a quagmire.
Oh, what could have been?
I feel like whatever it would have been, it would have involved a ball gag. That's just my
Absolutely.
Guess.
Yeah. Limitless possibilities.
Yes.
Really, that character.
It was. It's a shame. They don't make them like that anymore. You know?
Broke the mold. Yeah.
They just don't. Yeah. That's a shame.
I it's hard for me to say that I got more enjoyment out of anybody else's 1 year run in a wrestling promotion than I did out of Gene Stinsky. So,
well, I'm glad. I'm glad that, you know, you could share these feelings and these and you know, your memories of Stinsky, because obviously, you know, Stinsky was not around during the Monday Night War, so it's not something that would come up on what a maneuver, at least not organically. So
no, I'm sure that I've forced it at some point, because it just, he is a figure that enters very large in my wrestling memories. And, he's a dude that I really enjoyed for what he was. So
yeah, really have strong feelings about this. I appreciate that. All right. Well, if there's anything,
dude punted a baby into the audience.
He did. And we're all better for it. So, if you would like to plug things, you are welcome to do that now.
All right. This is where I need Joe, because I suck at this. But so we have a video game podcast on the Stick. We have an action movie podcast called the Action Cast. You can find those both on thestick.com. There's little buttons on the right hand sidebar where you can find those. And our other our wrestling podcast, obviously, What a Maneuver. So you can check all that stuff out if you'd like.
Yep. And you're on Twitter.
I am on Twitter, just at Just Talking Meat. So
yeah. Where does that come from, by the way?
It is a reference to a Devin Townsend song.
Ah.
Yes. And I meet and I talk. So
there you go.
There you go. Yep.
Nice.
Yep. You get a nice flank steak out. If, you know, if something bad happened, you could turn me into something useful, I guess.
I will keep that in mind.
Yep.
Well, thank you for much for being on the show and for talking Gene Snitsky and other things.
Thank you for having me.
And, everyone, of course, appreciate you guys listening. You can check us out at WrestleSpective.com. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Those are good places to listen. Also appreciate any reviews and ratings that you can leave, which allow us to become more popular and our rankings to increase and more people to learn about us. So appreciate the support. We're at WrestleSpective on Twitter and on Facebook. You can email me at WrestleSpective@gmail.com if you have any questions or concerns or complaints or compliments or any C word that you can think of. Mm. And
be careful.
Right. Yes. nothing gross, guys. And that's about it. So we shall be back another time. And thank you for continuing to listen. Goodbye.
And hey, if you don't like it, wasn't my fault.